Oh, there he is. He waits till 35. Boom. Fine. Just do what I told you to do. That's
yeah,
great.
He does, because he is a pro.
Dude, man. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. This is Make Me Smart, the Daily Edition. If I sound a tad deflated, it's because we tried to do a live video thing. Couldn't quite get our act together, so Molly and I are a tad bummed. We'll iron some things out. We'll do a little piloting, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
That said, it is still Friday. I do have a beer. I believe Ms. Wood has a glass of wine, and so we're going to try to make today make sense. That's what I think.
We are. We definitely are. And, you know, it's okay if only some things make sense. I feel like it's a somewhat appropriate situation.
That's right.
If, in fact, only some things make sense. All right. So here we are, Friday.
Yes.
Having happy hour. Shout out to our friends who are drinking along with us, our non-drinker friends. We are going to do our best. We're happy that it's Friday. Yep. It has been, I think we could say, a nonsensical week in a lot of ways. I added an extra make me smile.
Oh, you did? Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because we need to. But before that, let's talk about what happened today a little bit. I mean, this isn't even in here, but I think today we have to acknowledge that we are coming to you on a day when we reached unemployment levels not seen since the 40s in this country. Is that correct? Biggest monthly drop since like 1948 or something.
Yeah, the data goes back to 1948, and we have surpassed that, and we're approaching depression levels, you know, depression era levels.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. None of which we did not know was coming, but seeing it is a smack in the face, for reals. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. It's insane. And look, if you heard Marketplace this afternoon or you're going to podcast it tomorrow, whatever, you will hear Mitchell Hartman tell you that it's going to get a little bit worse before it gets better. And I think we all need to be ready for that. I actually struggled a little bit today on the program. Sorry, momentary soul bearing here. I struggle with the amount of bad news that I have been delivering to people lately. And and I just that's hard, man. It stinks. It just stinks. Yeah, anyway,
I know.
Sorry.
I heard you say it, and good job. But I hear you.
Yeah.
That's why this show is such a relief in some ways, because at least we get to try to end strong.
That's right. All right. So what are we going to talk about, for our things to help make the day make sense? I got one. You got one. You go.
We're going to start with the real. This is like a thing that we had suspected was the case and now is somewhat official. According to an inspector general report that was requested by some Democratic senators, the Small Business Administration, this is according to the Wall Street Journal, didn't follow several congressional mandates in implementing its huge loan program designed to keep businesses afloat during the coronavirus pandemic, including failing to issue guidance that prioritized underserved communities. So when we have wondered what happened and why so few loans ended up going to minority-owned or women-owned businesses or even just micro businesses, it turns out that, at least according to this report, the SBA didn't issue guidance that specifically called for that. The SBA also overwrote some of the congressional mandates or at least the congressional guidance, including the SBA issued rules that required borrowers to use 75% of the funding on payroll in order to receive full forgiveness of their loan. And we know that the forgiveness criteria has changed hour by hour for some of the businesses that took these loans, like in terms of what they need to do and what they need to file. I feel like we are staring down an entire terrifying forgiveness situation that I don't even want to like borrow trouble from right now.
No, it's real. And I think I've said this before, right? I'm involved with a nonprofit here and we applied for it and actually got 2 days ago from the first round. So think about this for a second. We were advised 2 days ago that we got our SBA loan from the first round, which we were told had been closed. First of all, problem number one, right? But number two now is I am panicked over the forgiveness provisions of this thing because they are so, so complicated. And it's insane that it's this hard, I just say. You know?
So I know someone who's a banker. And I gotta say, It's been real interesting getting background on some of this. Like, one interesting thing, even about this report that came out today, the Inspector General report, is that one of the things that apparently complicated the situation is that, like, the Small Business Administration and Treasury have beef. Like, they just don't agree on things. And so it's very interesting to me in some ways to see the SBA get thrown under the bus here in terms of what they did and did not issue as guidance. However, there is apparently, at least in the banking community, a long feeling that the SBA doesn't follow through. That, like, you think you issued a loan that was backed by the Small Business Administration, and it turned out that you didn't capitalize this one T that you were supposed to capitalize. And so, like, sorry, you don't get that money back.
Yes.
And I think there's a legitimate fear on the part of banks, which may have led them to prioritize big existing customers instead of rural minority and women-owned businesses, let alone just all the discrimination and crap that goes into that, which also happened, because they were afraid they weren't going to get paid back.
Yep.
I believe the term of art here is goat rope.
Cluster. Yeah.
Right. But if you wondered, if you wondered whether it was real that rural women and minority-owned businesses were, in many cases, left out of these small businesses loan, it was. It was real.
It is 100% real. Right. And it's a continuing mess. Truly. Truly, truly, truly. And it's, look, and so the messiness and the politicization of this and all of that is gonna damage whatever recovery we're gonna be able to manage coming out of this. I believe, you know. I just think it's all of a piece. That's my thesis. It's all of a piece. Yeah.
Yep. I agree.
Okay. So speaking of the politicization of this thing, there was a piece that I'm gonna go completely opposite. Sorry. Let me just point out that once again, you and I have done the it's not Freaky Friday. Parent Trap, right? We've done the Parent Trap switch.
Yep.
Because you have come up with something SBA and business-like, and I've come up with something reasonably tech-like. There was a piece in the Washington Post either yesterday or today by Dave Weigel. He's one of their lead political correspondents. And he downloaded both the Trump campaigns app and the Biden campaigns app and wrote about his experience. And it's absolutely fascinating. It is just bananas. Here's what he found, and I'm just going to read this.
Yeah. Tell me more.
The Republican effort was designed to keep supporters energized, inspired, and sometimes angry. The Democratic effort was genteel and gave me much less to do. And then he goes on to say, within 5 hours of downloading this app, he had the Trump campaign's app, he had been texted to, he had been emailed, he had been engaged inside the app, he had been solicited for money, he had been a whole bunch of stuff. It's craziness. And then, so that's within 5 hours of downloading the app. And he downloaded the Democratic app, the Biden campaign app, at the same time. 7 hours after downloading that, he got a note from Joe Biden that said, "Hey, thanks for signing up." And you're like, wow. It's really, really interesting how they are using digital tools to motivate their bases in so completely disparate ways. And his takeaway is that these two apps and the digital effort exist in totally separate ecosystems where nobody who sees one will see the other. You know what I mean? If you're following the Trump app and you're on the Trump campaign thing, you're not even going to see any of the stuff that the Biden campaign is doing, and vice versa. And I just think it's a lesson for our times. You know?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's fascinating how I'm just going to say Democrats writ large appear to be unable to hire digital strategists, maybe. Because the Trump campaign owned the internet in 2016 and still do, and understand the most dangerous part of it, which is engagement. The madder you are, and the more you stay on.
The more you stay on. And what's so interesting is that in 2008, Obama got all kinds of props for what in 2020 hindsight. Get it? 2020 visibility in 2020.
Hey, look at you.
The year. See what I just did there, right? In 2020 hindsight, it seems archaic what the Obama administration did, right? The Obama campaign did, but they got all kinds of props for their digital engagement and this and that.
Yep.
And now that's just gone, you know?
I mean, I read this Washington Post story today about the Biden live event that he tried to do, which I shouldn't throw too much shade at, because here we are having only sort of gone live on YouTube.
Oh snap.
But we're not running for president. And we don't have presumably millions of dollars to spend. And I was like, guys, there are a lot of TV producers with not a lot to do right now. Like, did you not even call any?
Yeah.
And maybe it doesn't matter. And there have been articles that are like, you know, does it matter?
Yep.
I don't know. I guess we'll see. Yeah, it is very interesting.
We're gonna see.
Fascinating choice for you to bring today.
So I was so interested by it. Anyway, so there you go. Anyway.
Yes. Good diversion. Good diversion.
One would hear the Happy Place thing right here.
Let's smile. Shall we?
People are listening. People are listening. Okay. I love mine. So you might have seen a couple of days ago this 5-year-old kid from Utah who stole, in air quotes, his parents' car this week, and he was driving to California from Utah to buy a Lamborghini. He's 5, okay, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out, I mean, I love that, right? Dangerous, yada, yada, blah, 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 but come on. Turns out some guy in Utah, a local business person, gave the kid a ride in an actual Lamborghini. Come on, man. I just love that. That's all I'm saying.
You do?
That's all I'm saying.
What part of you love that? Like the bad parent part or the like?
Yes, come on.
You do not get rewarded with a Lamborghini.
All right, fine. Yes, bad parenting, and I'm not encouraging this behavior. And if you're 5 years old and listening to this podcast, first of all, props to you. But second of all, don't steal your parents' car. But
to be clear, I'm not saying his parents are bad parents. I'm just saying, if you get rewarded for stealing a car at 5, this is, I think, the start of the plot of Talladega Nights right here, basically.
Okay. All right. That's fine. Yeah.
To go fast. Oh my God. That is wow.
Wait. You're a car woman. You are a car woman. Do you not appreciate this story? Come on. A little piece of you is like, I want to ride in that damn Lamborghini.
I like the video of Jimmy Butler getting the ride around the racetrack and freaking out and then saying that he has Kai's minivan. That was funny.
Well, now you have to explain. Take a minute and explain that little bit of shade you threw me on Twitter. Thank you very much.
Oh, that was so good. I didn't even tweet it. I only put it in our Slack. There was a viral video of the basketball player Jimmy Butler. Who does Jimmy Butler even play for right now? Is he like a? Nobody plays anything. Anyway, Jimmy Butler was in getting a racetrack ride, which sometimes happens, like a hot lap, and he did not love it. At all. He's freaking out. He's like clearly motion sick. He's like, oh, you're driving? I didn't know you were going to be driving. He's like, my head is banging against the side of the door. I don't like it. And the race car driver's like teasing him. He's like, what kind of car do you drive? I think it was in Montreal. And he goes, I drive a minivan. I drive a Toyota Sienna because I don't need to go fast. And I was like, oh my God, is Kai and Molly going on a road trip?
I am a proud minivan guy. I would also just like to say, in my own bleep in defense, first car I ever owned was a 1972 Cutlass convertible 442, which went 1,000 miles an hour in a straight line. That's all I have to say. Also got like 2 miles to the gallon or something, but whatever.
I mean, I love parts of it.
I actually thought you had tweeted it.
That's so funny. Nope, I kept it. Although now I brought it up here. So basically I kind of did.
That's right. Okay, go ahead.
I have two make me smiles. We sort of like jointly agreed that we're going to have to put this other one in here. But I just wanted to say this is sort of similar to yesterday's malaria situation, which is that turns out nature is awesome. And there is even a Twitter account at Nature is Metal. On Nature is Metal, they posted a video of a praying mantis eating a murder hornet. Boom. Murder hornet solved. Praying mantises. Eat them. Just eat them. That's my metal voice, in case you hadn't figured that out earlier. And then, because apparently I am the one who brings poop to the show, I would like to congratulate Ashley Feinberg at Slate.com for her audio investigation into which Supreme Court justice flushed. During recent court proceedings.
Wait. Okay, so look, cards on the table, I did not read this, but Do we think it's a Supreme Court justice or one of the lawyers?
We're pretty sure it was a justice.
Oh, are we? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Because I think it was during, I don't even know if lawyers were involved or maybe they were or whatever. At least according to this audio investigation, careful consideration, playing through all the different and listening to the different versions of the things that were also happening in the background. And Ashley has come to the conclusion. Do you want to guess which justice it was since you didn't read ahead?
Okay, wait. So hold on. It's definitely a guy. Stand by. Stand by. I'm going all the way to the top. I'm going to the Chief Justice, Roberts.
That was Ashley's original conclusion. I like how I'm like pretending that we're friends. But after careful determination and an examination of future times when there was like unfortunate multitasking during proceedings, she determined that it was Justice Stephen Breyer.
Wow.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
I guess like he also had a couple of other faux pas. Like in 2017, his phone went off in the middle of a public hearing, even though phones aren't allowed. At Wednesday, during those same Flushing arguments, Justice Roberts kept calling on him to start his questions, but he was met with silence. And then he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, the phone rang, so I answered it." and so on and so forth. There's some stuff about the sounds of dishes. Yes. Like maybe he went and got a snack.
Oh my God.
And then a snack leads to a visit to the bathroom when you're 81. So there you go.
Hey, now. Don't be ageist. That's not... Come on, man.
Okay, a snack leads to going to the bathroom when you're anybody.
All right, okay. All right.
Nature all right. is metal. All
right. Nature.
metal.
Nicely... My God, that was so good. All right.
Oh, my Lord.
Well.
Okay.
Here we are.
I think we're about done here today,
metal
friends.
Nature, we're done. Yes. Yes, please. I'm just going to give you a URL here. You know what to do. makemesmart.org/givesmart. These are tough times for everybody, and whatever you can do helps us put this podcast gem that it is on the internet. Sorry.
It is a team of people who are amazing at their jobs. We are grateful for what they do. And we have frankly asked them in some cases to triple their workloads. And we could not be more grateful for the work that they do and for what you give that helps us keep everybody employed.
Too true.
And hopefully not add to those roles. All right. We will see you again on Monday. MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org is our email address. Marketplace.org/GiveSmart is our donation address. Have a great weekend, everyone. You earned it. Put the news away.
Please do.
Put it down.
For sure.
Okay, you do the, I like the flippy. You do the flippity.
Oh, all right. Okay. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner, and our senior producer is Jody Becker. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Our video intern is Ethan Parrott, and Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and our smart speaker skill. God. All right, I've had a
That's beer. Why I'm glad we traded, because that's really hard to say. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe, who was like, stick to audio, guys.
Whatever.
Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Thanks, Executive Director Ronnie Matt Charney. I was the Senior Vice President, General Manager, Sarah Clark.
See? It's hard at the end. It's hard at the end. See?
I see what happens, too. It's my fault. I just keep talking.
No. No, that's fine. It's all good. I just want some understanding. That's all.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.